Hello there, and welcome along to this racing postcast. It is Monday, the 21st of June, the week following Royal Ascot. I'm Maddie Plough, and this week I'm joined by Lee Mossed, who was on course this week, as well as Tom Collins, who was also there for a couple of days as well. So hopefully we'll get some insight for you. We're going to look back on the whole meeting. Not all 35 races, we're going to mainly focus on the Group 1, so that's coming up. We're going to pick out all the talking points, which horses you need to follow going forward, which horses perhaps not, and what that's going to mean for the rest of the season. I'll get some markets up for you as well, so we can see how that's reflected in the future betting heats. But coming up, as well as that, I'm also going to chat to Lee and Tom about the prospect of extending the Cheltenham Festival to 5 days, the story that's on everyone's lips at the moment. We were even talking about it minutes ago before we came on air. Everyone has an opinion on that, so we'll get to the lads' views as soon as possible. And also the structure of Royal Ascot while we're at it. 35 races this year. Are we for or against with that 2:30 start and the late finish as well? So that's what's coming up. Stick with us throughout. Hopefully we'll talk about every point that you're wanting for us to discuss. Now let's start off with this Cheltenham Festival. 5 days, Lee. There seems like there's been chatter about it for some time now, but it's seeming like this is becoming like it could be even more of a possibility. Just explain why.
Well, so the suggestion is that the Jockey Club is looking towards doing that in 2023, pending industry action, seeing what people think, stakeholders. Financially is a thing. I mean, they will say that there are non-financial reasons for wanting to do it in terms of giving more people a chance to have winners of the festival, giving more people a chance to go to the festival. But numbers is the main thing, I think. The Jockey Club was hit hard by COVID, as were all racecourse groups. The Cheltenham Festival is the Jockey Club's cash cow, and they will probably feel that if they can get a fifth day at the festival and not damage the festival brand and product, that is worth doing. I see the logic commercially in them doing it, and I certainly think there's logic in saying that the Cheltenham Festival should extend to a Saturday, because for a lot of people, taking a day off work just isn't practical, it isn't possible. That's a valuable thing. But I would rather see the Cheltenham Festival go Wednesday through to Saturday than Tuesday through to Saturday. I think you can argue the festival is already, to an extent, slightly diluted. I think the fact that the Jockey Club were prepared to lose one of three or four races when the festival went, when we added the extra race, the 28th race, the fact that, you know, they were prepared to lose quite a few to get the Mayor's Chase. So is what I meant. You know, they were looking at the Kim Muir, the Martin Pipe, the Novice Handicap Chase that eventually went. That in itself says that not all the Cheltenham Festival races are essential. And I think for a meeting like the festival, most of the races should be deemed to be essential. So I would be against it, but I wouldn't be against moving the festival to end on a Saturday.
Tom, what do you think? Are you for or against a 5-day festival?
I can see both sides of the argument, really. And I'm not too keen to commit to either side, because I just hate that everyone in racing always moans about any kind of change. It gets on my nerves. We need some positivity in the sport. So on the negative side, obviously the extending of a meeting, another day, saturate the races, whatever. Although it would only be a 2-race increase, wouldn't it, with every card just limited to 6 rather than 7. On that matter alone,
just to interject, as a punter, would you prefer 6 or 7 race cards?
Well, I was just about to say, I mean, on that matter, I think I'm in my own league on this point, because I personally prefer much longer cards and fewer days. So, for example, like the Breeders' Cup, 14 race cards, only 2 days. I much prefer that than 5 or 6 days of 6 or 7 races. I just like to get the racing all over and done with, all in one massive big day. But you know what? That's by the by. We're never going to go to big race cards. On the positive side, though, the reason why I don't like the jump season over the flat season is because of the Cheltenham Festival. As good as the meeting is, everyone is just trying to win a race there. Therefore, the months leading up to that fixture tend to be ridiculously below par. You get Saturdays in the jump season where absolutely no good horses run. Literally not one good horse. It's just really dull. I'm not too sure whether adding a fifth day will actually help that. I think maybe if there are more races to win, fewer trainers and owners will actually want to go to the Cheltenham Festival, therefore making the actual season more on a par, if that makes sense. Hopefully that will be the case anyway, because there are a few dull Saturdays in the jump season. I don't really have a strong opinion on the matter. I just don't really like the moaning about it.
You're not in a good industry if you don't like people moaning. It's what we do best.
I know. Well, that's what everyone in Britain says, isn't it? We do moaning best. But that's just, I hate that take. Where's your positivity? Come on.
Right. Okay. Positivity. How positive are you feeling about the current Royal Ascot structure with the 35 races and how it went last week? What do you think?
Hey, look, I like the racing. I think it's just the start time that is the one thing that I would change. 2:30 is pretty late, I thought. You get up the other meetings over the course of the week started at 1 p.m. They finished at 5. Why can't Royal Ascot do the same thing? I don't mind the 7 races a day. I don't mind the 5 days either. I just don't like the start time.
I think that's due to do with the Queen, isn't it, Lee, and her arrival. That's why it's been pushed back to the later time. Is that right?
Yeah, so I think with Royal Ascot, more than any other meeting, you've got to appreciate it is not just a horse racing event. It's a big national event. It's a big part of what they call in the social season. And I think for a lot of people that go there and therefore finance and fund the meeting, it isn't just about a race day. It's about having a nice lunch beforehand, having a picnic in the car park, and then seeing the royal procession in a normal year and the arrival of the Queen. And that's built around a 2:31 race and the royal procession coming up the track for between about 2 o'clock and 2:15. So I think certainly for me as a writer, a 2:31 race isn't great because it means that your deadlines later in the day become very tight. But if you're a broadcaster, it actually works really well because I think the longer these race gates go on, having later big races is tends to be good for ratings. So whilst I professionally don't find a 2:31 race particularly helpful, I think for the event it's part of its tradition, and if any race meeting is built on tradition, albeit with a look to modernizing as well, it's Royal Ascot. So I'm not too bothered about a 2:31 race. Quite like a 2:31 race, and we can complain about it all you want anyway, it's not going to change.
Okay, let's get into this year's Royal Ascot Festival, if you like them, because very different. We didn't have crowds last year. It was a very different event. This year, there was the pilot event and top class racing. Let's start off on the Tuesday with the Queen Anne Stakes and Palace Pier first off. He was a cosy winner, but ultimately, I wasn't that impressed. I was almost expecting more. Is that a fair assessment, Tom?
I think so. I mean, we always expect more of Palace Pier because he is the leading horse in British racing. He's rated 1-2-5. He's won seven of eight starts before he ran at Royal Ascot. He was entitled to win. He was sent off 2-7. The punters, the bookmakers thought he was going to romp home, and he didn't. However, there are reasons for that. I know Kingmans tend to like quick ground, but Palace Pier just doesn't seem to. He likes a bit of cut in the ground, maybe good at best. And he just doesn't let himself down when it's rattling quick like that. I think you can mark up the winning margin. I was pretty impressed despite him not blowing my socks off, purely that he managed to get the job done. He didn't burst away from the pack, and the time wasn't great. I mean, if you look back at the previous victories of this race, he was over a second slower than the Royal Hunt Cup on Wednesday, for example. And then he was much slower than Lord Glitters in this race in 2019, Accidental Agent 2018, Ribchester 2017. All those races were run on ground ranging from good to firm, and they were all quicker than Palace Pier. But they didn't go very hard early, and I think that obviously attributes to the time. Bearing that in mind, Sir Busker ran a brilliant race, given he's a deep closer, comes from the back of the pack. He managed to finish third. I thought he ran a fantastic race to get so close. Palace Pier, you can mark up his effort, as I mentioned, but he's better on ground with some cut.
Okay, let's get some betting for you. We'll talk about some of these other horses in just a second. Perhaps most pertinent, the Sussex Stakes, Palace Pier 5-4. Poetic Flair, who we'll talk about in just a second, 5-2, St Mark's Basilica, 9-2, and then Joan of Arc, who won yesterday at 10-1. Tom, to me, I'd be quite excited to see what Palace Pier can do over 10 furlongs. Would you go that route or would you stick over a mile?
No, I would go 10 furlongs with him, very much like you. I think he's going to improve for the step up and trip. There were rumours that he could go to the Breeders' Cup mile, but I don't think that'll be the case. I think John Gosden said after the race that they were going to go up to 10 furlongs, if I'm right. I'm sure Lee will correct me if not. But I think he's got a great future over that trip. Not that he wouldn't over a mile, because he's the clear standout at the trip. But you want to see these horses try different divisions. And I think the step up to 10 furlongs will suit ideally.
Yes,
could help his value as a stallion as well, Lee.
Yeah, it would. I think it's a interesting question, a big question. So I remember I went down to see the Gosdens for an interview 5-6 weeks ago. And at that point, they were both saying, John and Thady, that the idea would be probably Judmont International to move Palace Beer up in Tripp. And you certainly said that York, this long home straight, would be right up his street. I suppose the problem is John and Thady Gosden have got two other very good horses out of the mile and a quarter division in Mishriff and Lord North in that older horse mile in 10 furlong group. And what we've seen in the past is that the Gosden team is very good at maximising the number of races it can win by keeping sometimes its stars apart. We've seen that in the past with some of their best horses. And I know after the Queen Anne, I was down there in the press area, and I asked John if he was still minded to go over a mile and a quarter, and I thought he sounded less enthusiastic about it. So I don't know. I think my hunch is that for as long as they think they can win races over a mile, they might just stick to a mile. The Prix Jacques Le Marois is the one that comes very close to the Judmont International, and I can't help but think that John Gosden will think if he has Mishriff and Lord North going to the German International, would it not make more sense to try and win a Jacques Le Marois with Palace Pier? Because I think that race also will suit Palace Pier more than the Sussex Stakes. But time will tell. But I could see Poetic Flair, who we're speaking about, going towards the Sussex and Palace Pier, maybe being directed more towards Deauville, because I think a straight mile is his sort of mile.
And potentially softer ground as well. Let's move on to the King's Stand then. It was won by last year's July Cup winner, Oxted. He was back down to the 5 furlongs, and that showed because there appeared to be a real pace collapse. Winter Power, Batash really faded, and this horse came through swooping to give Kieran Fallon his first Royal Ascot winner, and for Roger Teal as well. Great win this, TC. What do you think of the way the race played out tactically? Do you think he was even possibly flattered?
Yeah, I think the race was run. If Roger Teal could have dreamt up how the race would be run, that is how it would have been, because they just went so hard early. I want to mention Kay Amoro, by the way. How fast is that filly? She led the best turf sprinters around. Her early pace just wowed me. I mean, Winter Power, when she ran at York, was blisteringly quick from the outset, and I thought no horse is going to be able to match Winter Power. Well, Kay Amoro topped her in the early stages. I thought Batash's performance remains a matter of conjecture. People are guessing that he wasn't fit. Why would a horse with a record of 5 wins from 5 starts after 200-plus day layoffs come back and not be fit for a seasonal target? Now, I know he obviously suffered an injury in the interim, but I think he'd have been ready to go. It just seemed like Jim Crowley made his move at the wrong time. He went a bit too soon, quickened up to take over with, 2 and a bit furlongs to go in a race that was run at a breakneck gallop. They went so hard early. Batash just couldn't sustain his run to fend off the closers. I just thought that was the obvious reasoning behind Batash's performance. Oxted was given a great ride by Kieran Fallon, avoided the trouble. Unfortunately, King's Lynn and Stone Destiny, punters who were on those, were cursing as they ran into the back of those that were floundering. But I didn't think Oxted was going to win the race beforehand. Plenty of punters did, because there was some money into 4-1 second favourite. Thought it was a great ride, a good victory for Roger Teal. I loved the post-race interview where they said it was a family achievement and everyone in the yard's done a brilliant job. I thought that was a great touch. I couldn't see it coming.
Okay, let's run you through July Cup betting. Dream of Dreams, who won the Diamond Jubilee, we'll talk about him shortly, sharing favouritism with Oxted and Starman, who was non-runner. Rohan, of course, gelding, he'll need to be supplemented 7-1. Dragon Symbol, so unlucky in the Commonwealth Cup, 8-1, along with the Jersey winner Creative Force, and his old foe Campanelli, also the same price. Lee, I want a quick go back over to the St. James's Palace Stakes now, though, and talk about Jim Bolger's Poetic Flair. I must admit, I hadn't been blown away by what he had done so far at Newmarket or indeed in the Irish one, that 2,000 guineas. But I thought this was a totally unique performance, and he really surprised me with the performance he put in the St. James's Palace. Did he go up in your estimations after this?
Could not have done anything but go up. in my estimation, is Maddie. And, you know, you what you said about you hadn't been blown away by him beforehand, you couldn't have been blown away by him beforehand, because although he was, we knew he was an excellent horse. He'd won the 2000 Guineas, he'd gone to France, he'd gone to Ireland. He's clearly an excellent racehorse, but he hadn't produced a breathtaking performance, sort of which he produced in the St. James's Palace Stakes. I thought it was devastatingly impressive. Early in the home straight, he was tanking under Kevin Manning, looked like he was going to go and win by a big margin, and then he did. So although I don't think the Myling group of three-year-olds, either colts or fillies, are particularly exciting this season, I think Poetic Flair, certainly among the colts, has surged clear with that performance. I think Goodwood would be right up his street for the Sussex Stakes. You can see him coming off the bend, absolutely cantering under Kevin Manning, and just producing a turn of foot that puts all his rivals into huge trouble. So, yeah, I thought for a horse that we have seen an awful lot of, I thought he looked like a different horse at Ascot. And I'm sure that the ground was the key thing. He just loved that fast ground that we had on Tuesday. And when he gets it again in the future, he's going to be very hard to beat if he can keep producing, you know, RPRs in the mid-120s.
It's refreshing, isn't it, to see a horse as good as him be kept on the go as much. Admittedly, you can't do that with every horse, but he clearly thrives upon it. Quick fire question, Poetic Flair, Palace Pier and St Mark's Basilica, if they were to clash, whose side would you be on, Lee?
If they were to clash at Goodwood in the Sussex Stakes on fast ground, I'd be with Poetic Flair. If they were to clash at Deauville in the Prix Jacques Lemoyne on ground with a bit of ease in it, over a straight mile, I'd be with Palace Pier.
Okay, so no St Mark's Basilica love for you. What about UTC quickly?
Palace Pier for me, no matter where they met. I think even on quick ground, I'd rather Palace Pier. Can I just mention one thing about Poetic Flair? I'll keep it brief. It was just that sectional. They went pretty hard early in that race. Kevin Manning did a good job to get alongside the leaders and track the pace on Poetic Flair, who was in the perfect position turning in. He posted an 11.7 second sectional between two furlong and one furlong out, which put away his rivals. Until then, most of the field were matching the same, you know, the same sections, furlong sectionals. But Poetic Flair really quickened up well, and he sustained his bid the best in the fastest, posting a fastest final furlong too. Two rivals interested me in behind, looking at sectionals. Highland Avenue, who I think will be a brilliant horse over 10 furlongs. He quickened up well, but was racing towards rear and just didn't have the race run to suit, really. And Labarossa, who everyone's going to give up on because, you know, this year Labarossa hasn't been the horse that has wowed everyone and people were expecting big things as a three-year-old. Don't give up on him. I think he's going to be an out-and-out 7-furlong horse. He posted the fastest sectional in the race between 3 furlongs and 2 furlongs out before weakening. He's well on my radar moving forward. I think he's going to be a big price in good 7-furlong races and he's going to get the job done for Godolphin.
Fantastic. I love that. And speaking of love, brilliant segue there. Let's talk about the Prince of Wales' Stakes won by this fantastic filly. I thought it was a fabulous ride from Ryan Moore. Made most and fought on bravely to beat Ordaria and the rest of the colts in behind. One of a couple of real star performances from fillies we saw over the last week. Lee, was this what you were expecting or did it surpass that?
No, I think it was probably what we'd have hoped to see from Love. I think there were certainly probably maybe a few question marks about how strong her form actually was as a three-year-old. She kept winning and winning by big margins, but I'm not sure with hindsight she was beating the very best opposition. But she's plainly a seriously smart filly. And she got the job done in a wonderfully professional way on Wednesday. As you say, Maddie, Ryan Moore gave her an excellent ride. I thought at one point in the straight that Ordaria was really going to serve it up to her and potentially take it off her. But Love kept finding. I'm sure she'll improve for that run, her first of the season. Aiden's horses invariably just improve the more they race. And I think she'll probably be better back in a mile and a half as well. So there was nothing not to like about that seasonal reappearance, and I hope she goes on from that to the King George.
Yeah, a 5-2 chance roughly if she does go to the King George, similar price to a Dayar the Derby winner. You've got the likes of Pile Driver in there at 6s, and Alan Kerr, who was also a Royal Ascot winner, 12-1, Mahafeth 12-1 as well. So shaping up to be very interesting when we see the two different divisions clash. What do you think about Love's Arc credentials after seeing her race here, Tom?
Well, Love impressed me. I thought she got the job done really well after the long layoff. I fancied Lord North before, obviously, he got taken out. It got rid of some of the shine on the race, but it was still a thriller, wasn't it? And Love produced the goods off a long break, which I wasn't necessarily expecting because Aidan doesn't normally have them primed first time up. Obviously, as Lee mentioned, the ride by Ryan Moore was phenomenal. He gets a lot of stick, some probably worthwhile, but some not. I thought he gave Love the best ride he possibly could, set a steady tempo, quickened out of Swindley Bottom, got the fraction spot on, and she kept fending off Aldaria, who I think will play a big part in division moving forward as well. She was very impressive at the Breeders' Cup and backed that up with this display. She ran her heart out in second half off a layoff as well. Love's a very good filly. I haven't looked at the Arc yet. It's just too far away at this stage. But you know what? Aidan O'Brien just does so well with these types. She's a stellar sort. Aidan's going to get a spot on for the Arc, and it would take a brave person, a brave punter to rule against her, I think.
I love watching her. I love her attitude and I love her sort of expression. I just think she's a really likeable horse, really likeable individual to watch. She just thrives off her racing, clearly. On to Thursday, and we were hoping at the start of the week that Stradivarius would be able to emulate Yates and win a fourth Gold Cup. He couldn't do it. And very much a talking point this, Lee, because many thought that was down to the ride. Would you agree with that or not?
No, I wouldn't agree with that at all. I think certainly if Frankie Dettori could ride that race again, he would not ride it in the same way. His mount was clearly stuck for room, hampered, going around the start of the final bend, just at the point that Joe Fanning was rolling along on Subjectivist and opening up a bit of an advantage. But I think even when Stradivarius got daylight, he didn't pick up for me in a way that suggested had he had the dream run through the race, he would have won it. So I think you can perfectly well argue both that Frankie Dettori didn't ride the race he would have wanted to ride on Stradivarius, but that also the best horse won the race. Because I thought on the day, Subjectivist was tremendously impressive. Yes, he nicked a lead, leaving the side of the course into the home straight, but he kept galloping all the way to the line. I thought he looks like a real young now star stayer who's proven on very fast ground. He's proven in the mud. He's with the right sort of trainer, Mark Johnson, who's got a great record with his long distance horses. And I think what we saw on Thursday was the baton being passed from Stradivarius to Subjectivist.
In which case then you'd be more with Subjectivist at 6-4 than with Stradivarius at 7-4 going onwards to Goodwood then?
Yeah, I think I would, Maddie. I thought it was an excellent performance, and he's the one now who's got the momentum behind him. He's a star in the ascendancy. He's the younger horse. And I do think he was an excellent Gold Cup winner.
We must mention as well Princess Zoe, a fantastic run from her in second, proving she handled the firm ground. Trushan, he was a last-minute non-runner. He had many supporters. He could well run in the Northumberland Plate next, so that'll be interesting if he carries a big weight there. Now, perhaps one of the best stories or the most interesting dramatic stories of the week came in the Commonwealth Cup. We'll discuss that just after this.
Racing Post Members Club is the only subscription that includes access to the Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m, plus exclusive premium content including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. As a listener of the Postcast, you can enter the code POSTCAST21, that's POSTCAST21, to get 50% off your first 3 months. Head to racingpost.com, click on subscribe, and choose Get Ultimate Monthly to get started. That's code POSTCAST21.
On now to the premier event over 6 furlongs for the 3-year-olds, the Commonwealth Cup, and one of the most interesting races, arguably, of the whole meeting. Dragon Symbol and Ashin Murphy were first past the post, but he hung right-handed into Campanelli, ridden by Frankie Dettori. There was a lengthy and heated stewards' inquiry afterwards. Did they make the right decision, Tom?
Well, interestingly enough, I arrived on course at Ascot as they crossed the line. I missed the drama live. All I know was that Dragon Symbol crossed the line in front. People were saying that Dragon Symbol won. Then I got to see the replay. I didn't see any of the things that happened in the stewards' room. I heard it was heated, but I didn't get to see any. Looking at the rule, I don't like our rule because it's subjective, right? Would the positions have changed? Did the best horse finish second or did the best horse win? How do you know that? Like, it's impossible. Who knows, you know? Personally, I thought Dragon Symbol, having watched the replay several times, would have won the race anyway. Campanelle was clearly taken offline. She was floundering in the final 50 yards when Dragon Symbol straightened up. Saying that, I think the amended result was actually the right decision. In the fairness of sport, you can't be allowed to severely interfere with a rival. Imagine, for example, in the 100 meter finals at the Olympics, Usain Bolt, for British sake, was battling Adam Jamili, okay? And Bolt veered from the middle lane, lane four, over to lane one, taking Adam Jamili out and beat him by 0.01 seconds. It's impossible to know whether, in that example, Adam Jamili would have got by Usain Bolt. But because he's severely hampered the rival, you have to err on the side of caution and say that Jamili would have potentially won. I think it was the right decision. You can't let a horse take out another horse and win, especially when the margin is so small at the end. But I do have to say, I feel sorry for Dragon Symbol's connections. Asheen Murphy, I thought he was the best horse on the day.
Could he have done more, Asheen, in the saddle to avoid this happening? Do you think he could have won the race, fair and square?
Yeah, I do think so, because originally he had his whip in his right hand and he gave Dragon Symbol a couple of slaps and he was slightly hanging to the right. Then Asheen switched to the left hand, which I thought was a bit of a weird decision, which consequently led to Dragon Symbol drifting further right and into Campanelli's path. Look, it's a real tough decision because, you know, these stewards in our country aren't very consistent at the best of times, right? At Royal Ascot, on a big stage, in a Group 1, well, there's such a fine margin. You've got an American horse that's come over. You've got the two best flat riders or two of the best flat riders in the game battling it out. It was going to be a lose-lose for the stewards because they were going to get bad comments, basically, no matter what they did. I think they made the right decision. I can understand why Dragon Symbol connections may be appealing. I'm not sure if they are. I'm sure Lee may know that one. But it was a big talking point, wasn't it, on the Thursday?
Yeah, I spoke to Asheen yesterday and he said there hadn't been any talk about appealing it. I'm not sure they will. He was clearly disappointed about this and also about the run of King's Lynn in the King's Stand. That's the one he thought got away, but he ended the meeting as leading rider. So he clearly did an awful lot right. Was his decision to do what he did here right, Lee?
Which particular decision do you mean, Maddie?
Well, with Tom saying he switched his whip and he allowed, the stewards deemed him that he allowed his horse to drift, do you think he could have done more? Do you think he made the right move at the right time or he should have done something different?
Potentially. I wouldn't be too harsh on him, though, in terms of what he did in the race. I like Tom, I think it was the right call. I think it very difficult. And ultimately, these things have to be subjective. It's about a few people in a room having to decide what they think is the right decision to be made based on the rules. And I think that the key thing to stress is that the stewards aren't deciding who was the best horse in the race. They're having to decide what the consequences of the interference were, regardless of who was the best horse in the race. And I think they got that. I think they got the right decision. You know, I think if you repeatedly bump, nudge your horse, carry that horse across the track, and then win the race on the nod, I think you're going to lose the race, and I think you should lose the race. So that was disappointing for Asheen and Dragon Symbol and the connections. I think the stewards got the right decision.
And what do you
just
think
sorry to butt in here, Maddie. Just two things, right? I need to say this about the rule. I hate our rule. Like, we need to amend it. The stewards need, BHA needs to amend this rule. I don't understand what it is. It just changes. They're so inconsistent. We see this on a day in, day out basis where there are stewards' inquiries and they get changed one day and the next day the same thing happens and it doesn't get changed. We need consistency. In the States, for example, and I'm not saying this is the right rule because it's not, they're too willing to change the result. But in the States, if you cause a foul, e.g. come in front of your rival or even bump your rival, and there's a smallish winning margin, it doesn't even have to be a smallish winning margin. necessarily. I've had a bet before where I bet a race called Charlestown, and this horse came up, my selection came across after 100 yards in the race, came across slightly hampered the six, it was number seven, to get to the rail. He won by 15 lengths and was chucked out. Now that rule is wrong, okay, because the best horse won, and you know the result shouldn't have been changed. But our rule needs to be more consistent. We need to know fine lines of what will throw a horse out and what won't, because otherwise we've got no clarity in this kind of situation.
What would you respond to that, Lee? Because you deal a lot on course with instances like this, especially big profile ones. Do you agree?
I don't really, in the sense that I think the sort of rule that Tom is calling for would be more akin to the one that used to exist in France, whereby the stewards there were much keener to say, if they saw anything that they deemed to be significant interference, the horse that caused it would be placed behind the horse who was the victim of it. What's happened in recent years is that there has been a move towards the major European racing nations basically following the same rules, whereby a series of questions are asked. So if you're within the stewards panel at Ascot or indeed the Curragh or Longchamp, you'll be asked the same questions. At Friday would have been one, where did the incident take place in relation to the winning post? Two, how were the horses involved in the interference going at the time of the incident? Three, how serious was the interference, i.e. how much momentum did the sufferer lose and or how much ground was lost? Question four, if the sufferer had an uninterrupted run to the line, might it have finished in front of the interferer? If no, order placings remain unaltered. If yes, i.e. there is some doubt, you have to proceed to question five, which was how easily did the interferer beat the sufferer? And the rules state, having considered those factors relevant to the incident in question, if the panel is satisfied that on the balance of probabilities, the interference did improve the placing of the interferer in relation to the sufferer, the placings must be altered. Otherwise, the placings must remain unaltered. And then they stress this in bold. Generally speaking, the longer the panel discusses whether the placings should be altered, the less likely they should be. If the panel is unable to conclude one way or the other, the result should stand. That sounds quite long-winded and detailed, but I think it is the best way of doing it.
That's consistently followed though across the country.
No, I don't. But the problem is, it's quite hard. It's quite hard to follow it consistently. I think.
All of those questions are not. You can't confirm either way whether it would have happened. Do you know what?
Well, you can't. But the alternative is you have a system akin to the one where, if you look back at the 1988 Gold Cup, which was the previous high-profile DQ at Royal Ascot. And in that instance, the horse Royal Gate, a French raider who won the Gold Cup by a huge margin, was thrown out because he committed interference to Sadim. And Sadim was placed first, even though it was blatantly obvious that horse didn't deserve to be promoted to first place in the Gold Cup, unless you have a very clear rule that says you've caused interference, you're thrown out, it's always going to be subjective. And the very fact that at Ascot, around that winner's enclosure on Friday afternoon, I was speaking to people who thought, the majority of people thought that Dragon Symbol should be disqualified. But there were people who thought, based on the rules, that Campanelle should keep the race. And if in that instance you have a 7-3 ratio or 6-4 of people thinking what one thing compared to the other, then I think inevitably in some stewards' rooms you're going to have occasions where some stewards view a thing differently, because ultimately they have to make a decision based on what they're seeing and they have to take a subjective view of it. So I think, although we'd always love to see consistency, the problem is that within our own eyes, what we think is the right outcome is going to differ to what other people think. So I think it's very hard to be consistent because it's not a black and white thing.
It's not an exact science, is it? Look, let's move on because we could talk about this for a long time. But you clearly disagree to an extent there, but we can all agree that they're two fantastic horses. And as I mentioned earlier, they could well clash in the July Cup. We'll see in the future what steps their trainers take and which directions they want to go. But for Oisin Murphy, that was a lot to take in the space of a short time, but he got aboard alcohol-free in the Coronation Stakes on that softened ground, hadn't been seen since she was fifth in the 1,000 guineas. And he delivered her, smuggled her into the field and delivered her with a knockout blow in the final furlong. What did you make of her win and the performance of those in behind? Many drawn to Snow Lantern. I'd back the German filly November. I thought she looked a winner for some way, Tom. Was this a career best from alcohol free? And what was your overall analysis of the horses in the race?
Yeah, definitely a career best. I thought, as you mentioned, November there, she loomed into the straight like the most likely winner, but didn't seem to stay the trip out as well as others. Yeah, I thought it was a big career best by Alcohol Free. She proved that she handled the mile, which I thought was important. Oisin's never been worried about the trip, but plenty obviously have. She won the Middle Park. Was it the Middle Park? No, so the Cheveley Park as a two-year-old over six furlongs, and then obviously won over seven furlongs in the Fred Darling on her reappearance. There were doubts after the guineas, whether this trip would be ideal, but clearly she stays. Oisin's always said if doesn't have to touch her mouth early and she settles well, then she'll stay the trip. And given she's by No Name Ever, whose progeny love testing ground, we really shouldn't have been too surprised that Alcohol Free did stay. I was on Snow Lantern. I tipped her in the punt, as you mentioned. She finished second, caught the eye. I thought she ran her heart out. She ran a great race. She's extremely talented, only had four starts and bounced back from her York third place where she was just far too keen. Andrew Balding, we should mention him as well. Another victory for Balding. He had a brilliant week. I think he finished second in the Trainers' Championship to Jonathan Ailey Gosden. Brilliant 5 days for him. Alcohol Free is a very useful filly. She's won two Group 1s now. It's just six runs. It was a good race full of good horses.
Would you therefore back Snow Lantern if they were to face off in a race like the Falmouth?
Yeah, if the ground's a little bit quicker, I would definitely back Snow Lantern over Alcohol Free. I think Alcohol Free handled the conditions a bit better than Snow Lantern. I think Snow Lantern's open to plenty of improvement. It wouldn't be a surprise at all if she won at Group 1 level soon.
Okay. And if first you don't succeed, try, try and try again. That was the mantra that Dream of Dreams was going by in the Diamond Jubilee. And the seven-year-old got the job done for Sir Michael Stout, owned by Saeed Sahail. He's been a real standing dish in this division for a number of years, second to Blue Point twice in this race. And he got the better of Glenn Shiel, Art Power and Happy Power in this big six furlong sprint. I've got to be honest, Lee, it's not a division that excites me terribly. I'd like to see some more quality. But as I mentioned in my Weekender column, couple of months ago, there just aren't the horses there at the moment. But Dream of Dreams, he capitalized on the opportunity.
Yeah, and of course we would have had Starman in the field but for the ground changing. I watched that race with much more of a smile on my face. I think you did, Maddie, because I just think Dream of Dreams deserved that. He'd come so close to winning that race in the previous 2 years. You could argue he's unlucky not to be a three-time winner at the Diamond Jubilee. I think he's enormously likable. That is his day, I think, every year when you're going to see Matty's best, because he's very well suited to Ascot in the summer, not so much in the autumn when we get really horrible autumn heavy ground. But I thought he deserved that race. I thought it was a super performance. Great to see Glenn Shiel back up his Champions Day run. Nothing wrong with what he did there. But I love the old boys. I love the geldings. I love the fact that we see them year after year, and I was delighted to see Dream of Dreams win that race.
And quickly, speaking of geldings, Rohan, he wasn't allowed to run in the Commonwealth Cup. I don't think he was even allowed to run in this race now, as three-year-olds aren't allowed. You don't agree with that?
No, I would prefer to see a system whereby, particularly in relation to the Commonwealth Cup, that three-year-olds are allowed to take part in it. I understand why three-year-old geldings can't run in the classics, and I understand that the Commonwealth Cup is supposed to be like a parallel race for horses that don't get a mile, but I just think I would prefer it just to be the classics and not the other three-year-old only Group 1s, my view is generally that whilst I accept that you can make an argument to say that geldings have an advantage over entire three-year-olds in that they're less temperamental, they may be easier to train, in general terms, I want to see the best horse winning the races, regardless of whether that horse is able to reproduce or not. And it seems to me perverse that at the end of Royal Ascot, the best three-year-old sprinting performance undoubtedly came from Rohan in the Wokingham. And that three-year-old who produced that performance wasn't allowed to run in the three-year-old sprint championship, the Commonwealth Cup. That, for me, doesn't make sense. And it's certainly not what I would want to see. I, you know, the breeding industry clearly produces the horses that race in our races. But I don't think, I think in this instance, it's more the tail wagging the dog that, that precludes geldings from taking part. I think it makes no sense that geldings can run in the trial races for the Commonwealth Cup, but they're not the, the Commonwealth Cup itself. You know, Rohan could run in the Pavilion Stakes and the Sandy Lane, but they're not the races that those two trials lead into. That doesn't make any sense to me. So I would limit it to the classics, and I would let the geldings run in these races so we actually see who the best horse on the day is, regardless of whether that horse has his bits or not.
The Hardwick Stakes was won by a horse without any bits because it was won by filly. It
was, that was a technical term, I should say. That's a technical term, the, you know, the biological term.
Yes. Wonderful Tonight won the Hardwick Stakes. It wasn't a Group 1, but I do think it deserves a quick mention. Such was just how impressive this performance was. I'm looking at her entries now. She's entered in the Coral Eclipse, the Princess of Wales, the King George, the Irish Champion Stakes, the Irish St. Ledger, and indeed the Ark. And she's going to be a key player in all of those, I would think, TC. Myself and DJ disagreed on this performance somewhat. I thought it was one of the most impressive wins I've seen all season over the distance. He didn't think she'd be winning the King George or the Ark. Whose side are you on?
Neither. I thought it was a really good performance, very impressive, a clear career best on RPRs. I don't think she'll be winning the Ark though. So I'm a bit in between both of you. To be honest, looking back at those who she beat, I thought Broom just plugged on one pace as he always does. Huckham travelled really nicely but never really got involved. And then Thunderous finished fourth, who hasn't really been the same horse this year. Japan's really disappointing. So Ron Priestley disappointed last time. I don't think the form is as strong as what you'd get, for example, in the Ark. But take nothing away from the filly. Devin Monizier, brilliant training performance. She obviously loves testing conditions. She's a very, very good horse. And I was very impressed. I didn't think she'd win as easily as she did, but she was very decisive in the end.
You've got to be careful when you're picking sides on this podcast, because I'll hold it against you in future.
I'm on your side, Maddie. I'm on your side. I love Wonderful Tonight. I thought she was hugely impressive, and I think if we get Autumn Ground in Paris, she will win the Ark.
Yay! Lee's coming back next week.
Thank you.
There we are. Best of the rest, a handicapper and a juvenile from each of you. I know that's harsh. There was a lot of performances, but we've got to narrow it down. TC, you go first.
Right, I'm going to give you two handicappers, but quickly. Real World in the Royal Hunt Cup. Incredible performance for Saeed Bin Saroor, Marco Gianni. Phenomenal. I mean, just one race towards the far side. Everyone thought coming towards the near side was the place to be. He bolted up by 4¾ lengths under Marco Gianni. Great ride for him. First Royal Ascot winner. This horse was just unthought of after four maiden runs, but hugely impressive. He looks a group horse in the making, if not now. Two horses that ran on Saturday, Point Lonsdale and the Chesham. I thought he's just crying out for a mile two furlongs on mile four. He's going to be a real classic contender next year. I think he's favourite for the Guineas and the Derby at this stage. Wouldn't surprise me if he won both. And then in the Golden Gates handicap, Fox's Tails flew home. Now, I was with him. I think you were as well, Maddie, at Chester, when he finished behind El Drama after he beat Council in a Newbury Maiden. Now, that Council that finished second is the horse I want to keep on side. I fancied him for the Britannia, but he got pulled out. He didn't make the final field. Fox's Tails was so impressive. Came from last to first under Rasheen Murphy in the Golden Gates. Won by 2¼, staying towards the far side. Quickened up like a really smart horse. He's unexposed, three-year-old. I think he could be a group horse too.
His riders certainly think so, or so he told me yesterday. So fingers crossed if you're a Fox's Tail follower like myself and Tom, we'll see him in group company sooner rather than later. And a juvenile?
Sorry, that was Point Lonsdale. Yeah, in the Chesham.
Oh, I think sorry, he's gonna, you've gone for it.
Yeah, I think he's going to win a classic next year. Probably the Derby. I prefer him for the Derby over the Guineas. He seems like a real stayer in the making. His pedigree suggests he'll prefer a mile and a half rather than the mile, but he has plenty of ability, and Aidan O'Brien wouldn't run a horse in the Chesham if he didn't think he could win a classic.
It's a route he's took with some of his best recently, isn't it? Lee, a handicapper and a juvenile from you.
Start with the juveniles. I'd say Point Lonsdale again, but also second Reach for the Moon. I thought the Queen's horse ran a really lovely race. I like both those two going forward. They'd be my picks from the juvenile races. Handicapper, I would just pick out Salamarak. I thought that was an excellent effort to finish second in the King George V handicap off a rating of 100. So I like him going forward. And echo what Tom said about the Hunt Cup winner. And just one horse we've not really mentioned much, Maddie, in the programme, but I think is worth going forward, is Alenka. I thought I really loved him in the King Over 7 Stakes. I think he's a difficult horse at home by all accounts. But on the race course, he's a proper pro. He beat the Derby winner at Sandown, so he upheld that form at Ascot. And I think he will win a Group 1 before the season's out. Really like him.
Do you think it'll be the King George?
I'm hoping it's going to be a really hot King George. If we have the Derby winner there, and if we have Love there as well, that's going to be a hot race. I would be... We don't see the Irish Derby entries until tomorrow. I suppose he could be supplemented for that. But also there's the Grand Prix de Paris, which is now later in the calendar than it used to be. So mid-July, the last opportunity for three-year-olds to race against their own age group only. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if William Haggies plots a course towards the Grand Prix de Paris with him.
Okay, and what about the Irish Derby then, Lee? You mentioned it there, the Dubai Duty Free Irish Derby, the Group 1 over a mile and four. I'll just run you through the horses that we have. As you say, they're going to change tomorrow. High Definition, surprisingly the evens favourite, ahead of Hurricane Lane at 7-2. Max Winnie, who was fourth at Epsom, a 6-1 chance. Bolshoi Ballet, the favourite that day, he's in there at 8-1, along with Lone Eagle. Then you have St Mark's Basilica, who I think it's fair to say he isn't going to turn up at 14s. A few at 20s, I'll read out Saloukan, Van Gogh, Wordsworth, all for Aidan O'Brien. Tom, what was your analysis of this race B? Do you think this is the right decision to go for the Curra with High Definition? And how do you look back at his Dante performance now? We've seen what Hurricane Lane and indeed the other horse who ran in the French Guineas, McGallan, what he managed to do, which wasn't much.
Well, Hurricane Lane, I thought Frank the form. He ran really well at Epsom when he finished third, despite losing two shoes. I think this is definitely the right decision to run High Definition in the Irish Derby. I don't think he would have won at Epsom. He seems more of a galloper, and that downhill track at Epsom, the camber, wouldn't have suited him. I don't think he would have won that day. I think he's going to win the Irish Derby. Not that that's original, because he's probably going to go off odds on favourite. It's just not a race where, I know there has been some really good winners in recent years, the likes of Camelot, Australia, Harzan, Jack Hobbs, but Aidan O'Brien has won this race with some below par, well, I say below par, obviously they've become classic winners, but some horses that aren't real superstars. The likes of Santiago's disappointed this year. Sovereign, I know he made all with a bias, but he hasn't done much. Capri as well was disappointing after he won. I think High Definition is better than all of those. And given the competition he's going to face probably isn't the strongest, I think he's going to win for Aidan O'Brien.
Okay, Bolshoi Ballet, he did have his excuses at Epsom. He was struck into in the early stages and clearly didn't deliver on his earlier promise. Do you think he can do better now, Lee?
Yes, I think he probably can. I think he's certainly a better horse than he showed at Epsom. And I would respect what Tom says about High Definition. I don't think the Derby would have been his race. The track wouldn't have been his track. The Curra could be made for him. But I think we'll see a very rare thing on Saturday. I think we'll see a British-trained winner of the Irish Derby. They have been exceptionally rare in recent years. When I was a lad, every year it was a British winner of the Irish Derby. Not anymore. Jack Hobbs won it for John Gosden in 2015 in the Godolphin Silks. That was the first one. Right back to the 1990s. And I think we'll see a British winner again this year. I think Hurricane Lane, who ran such a good race in the Derby behind his stable companion, Adia, I think he'll win it for Charlie Appleby.
I quite like the look of Lone Eagle for Martin Mead, so that's another British contender to throw into the mix. Before we leave you, any fancies this week? Any naps, Tom?
Yes, the horse I put up at the start of the year, back in March, I think it was, is my horse to follow this summer or spring or autumn, whenever the flat season runs, is Alan Brister for Smart Prescott. Now, I spent about a week straight trying to find a horse to put up that wasn't really obvious and in the Guineas or the Derby or whatnot. I found this Alan Brister, who's only rated 63. She's a filly by Bobby's Kitten, whose horses do really well on all types of ground. She's out of a Galileo mare called Alma Ranta, and she's bred and owned by Kirsten Rousen, who does so well with her middle distance horses. Alma Ranta is a half sister to Alba Flora, who's a real nice sort. She runs over a mile four. Alyssa, who won over a mile six and a half. Aloe Vera, who won over a mile four. And Ali Iacta, easy for me to say, who won over a mile. They've all achieved RPRs in excess of 100. Alan Brister, after three maiden runs over seven furlongs in a typical Samart Prescott style, is rated just 63. She makes a handicap debut at Brighton tomorrow in the 2:45. That's on Tuesday. Luke Morris will take the ride. Look, she's not going to be a massive price. It's a weak field. She'll probably, well, I hope she'll romp up over a mile two. She's stepping up three furlongs in trip. But this is a filly who could easily rack up five, six wins this year. I wouldn't be surprised if she's rated in the 90s come the end of the flat season.
Okay, a big improver then potentially for Tom. Lee, what's caught your eye?
Much less exciting, but I will go with the horse who was declared for the Woking and then didn't run because of the ground, but he's now set to go to Newcastle on Saturday for the Chip Chase Stakes, the Group 3. I would say chill to continue Andrew Balding's very hot streak.
Indeed, brilliant week for him, as it was for Ashin Murphy. And William Haggis, he's had a quite nice week as well, with Mahartheth and Alan Kerr winning for him. Thanks for joining us on today's show. Fingers crossed we found you some future winners there, both in the long-term future and this week. Please rate, review and subscribe. And Bruce will be back on Friday. He will look forward to that Irish Derby with a more final field for you. So best of luck with whatever you're doing and wherever you're betting this week. And we'll see you again very soon.